Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, December 8th, 2011. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. Well, this week, Andy Sparks gives us an audio tour of his home brewery in progress. I've been after Andy for a while to do a special video tour of his brewing setup. He says it's not ready to look at yet, but he did spend some time talking us through his gear. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And our new 2012 Brewer's Logbooks are in the house. Get yours. Order yours now so that you can either give it to your favorite brewer for Christmas or give it to yourself for Christmas and be ready to hit the ground running as 2012 dawns. And you can do your first, you can log your first of 50 batches of beer in the book. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We also have a Basic Brewing Radio and Basic Brewing Video page on Facebook, facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us first and click on our associate link. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support, especially during this holiday season. And there is now an amazon.co.uk link on our site as well. So you can click across the waters there. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android apps on their respective stores, and we're on the BlackBerry podcast directory now, too. Let's take a quick look into the mailbag before we head over to Andy's house. John from Antioch, California writes, I enjoy listening to the collaborative experiments and always learn something new. Well, thanks, John. I learned something new, too. However, I have noticed that you and the collaborators use different recipes and styles for these experiments, so I was wondering if some of the variables would be eliminated by brewing with a base recipe of barley, hops, water, steeping and boil time and temperature, type of yeast, and fermentation time and temp all the same. I just heard you read from the mailbag, Will of Columbus, Ohio. He mentioned that one experiment doesn't prove enough and more experiments would be needed. So maybe a recipe with constant ingredients may offer a good proving ground. That's an interesting idea, John. It certainly wouldn't eliminate all the variables completely because, of course, everybody has his or her own brewing style and equipment and locations. I mean, it depends on where you are in relation to sea level, the temperature of your boil and such as that. However, getting everybody to brew the same recipe would probably be useful in certain experiments. So I'll talk to Chris about that and put that idea in the hat. You know, to be honest, part of the fun for me is seeing what everybody chooses to brew for the experiments. I love seeing the diverse tastes that homebrewers across the country and around the world have. But, it's worth a thought, at least. I appreciate it. Peter in New Hampshire asks, can you go over the costs of the ingredients in a 5-gallon batch? Yeast, hops, grain, etc. The price per bottle would be very interesting to viewers who do not now brew at home. That's another interesting idea. It's a bit tricky because the cost of the ingredients vary, depending on where and when you buy them. Take hops, for example. You can buy them in bulk online pretty cheaply, at least for now. And if they're divided up, say, per ounce or per 2 ounce or whatever, at local homebrew shops, it may be more expensive. But over the course of the life of this podcast, of course, we've seen hop prices on kind of a roller coaster ride as shortages and surpluses come and go over time. So, however, it may be fun to do some sort of a show, sort of putting a benchmark in the sand, so to speak, and just saying here at this particular time, this is like the average cost of brewing a batch of a 5-gallon or 20-liter batch of beer. So that may be worth doing a show just all in itself, and just to kind of look at the price ranges around the country and around the world. Finally, from the mailbag, I have to tease Scott in Las Vegas. he sent a very kind note and demonstrated the dangers of autocorrect on the iPhone. Scott says, I made the zombie Belgian, except I put the D candy sugar at the end of the boil. Mine is extremely lighter. Very interesting. I usually boil my Belgian candy syrups and sugars for half an hour, so maybe that's the difference. Scott says, it's still good, but looks a lot different. I will make others. Thanks to you and Steve for the videos. You are a great duo. I really enjoy them. Well, I appreciate that, Scott. He says, I started listening to the radio podcast as I was running. It makes the moles go by faster. And at that point, I actually put the coffee down and had to laugh a little bit. Scott then sent a follow-up note clarifying afterwards that it was the miles that were going by faster, not the moles. you know you're running slow when you see the mole runs, you know, pop up faster than you're going as you're running by. So anyway, thanks for the note, Scott, and I hope you don't mind me teasing you just a bit. You should read the emails from Steve, you know, because sometimes he gets in a hurry. He doesn't proofread very well, so... Anyway, let's get into our interview. Andy Sparks, as you know, probably is the owner of thehomebrewery.com, which is the shop in Fayetteville, Arkansas that I go to here locally. It's the birthplace of this podcast, by the way. And the first three episodes, you know, as you remember, probably were recorded in the back room of the shop. But anyway, as I said in the beginning of this show, I've been bugging Andy to talk about his home brewery on video. He says it's still not ready for the screen or even photos, but he did agree to give us a progress report on audio on where he brews his tasty beers. Well, Andy Sparks, where the heck are we?
Well, we're in my garage, or my brewery, as I like to call it.
There's certainly no cars in here.
Yeah. There's a motorcycle over there.
So it is a haven for at least one wheeled vehicle. But it is taken over by loftier aspirations. There's a couple of big refrigerators in here for storing beer that's already brewed.
Well, that's right. I have one refrigerator in here that's for finished beer, and it's... got a nickname. It's called Andy's Magic Beer Fridge. It's a three-door refrigerator, and it has kegs all along the bottom, and I keep my beer collection up on the top shelves. But I also have another commercial size refrigerator. It's just a two-door, and I use that for fermentation.
Which we'll talk about at the end of the process. I wanted to take some time. We plan to eventually do a video podcast episode with showing your brewing setup when it is finished to your satisfaction, but you know that the way projects go, that may be a while. So I kind of wanted to get a snapshot of where you are right now, which is certainly a lot farther along than when you first started. To take kind of an audio look at your system to see where you are right now, and we can talk about where you want to be eventually as well. But let's start at the wall. This is an electric system, and when you first started brewing electrically, you found your setup wanting?
Well, you know, when I first kind of started to put the brewery together, I had propane. I used propane for a long time to brew with, but I knew that I kind of wanted to switch to an electric brewery. There's a couple reasons for that. I don't like having to run to the store every time I want to brew and buy another tank of propane. It's nice that electric brewery, it's always here. It's always ready to go. And the other thing is cost. It's a little cheaper to do it with electricity. One of the reasons for that is that when you're heating water with electricity, especially the way I do it with a heating element, like a hot water heater element, all the energy is being pushed into the water, and none of it is being wasted as heat that's coming up around the sides of the pot and warming the room that you're in. So I also wanted to be able to brew in the dead of the winter with the door shut, and I didn't really like the idea of, you know, running a propane burner inside the house or inside the garage. So I've been wanting to go all electric. So when I decided to do that, I started, like you said, at the wall. And the truth is, I didn't have anywhere near the amount of electricity that I needed to have in the garage. The truth is, the electricity for the garage was basically just a, you know, hanging off the electricity that goes to my home theater. So you really hate to be, you know, using all that for your brewery. So what I did is I actually pulled two complete services out to the garage, two new 60 amp services. So that brings me a total of 120 total amps out to the garage. Now, I won't ever need anywhere near that, but what that does is it gives me several, dedicated connections. So dedicated outlets. I have two 220 outlets that are dedicated, and then I can draw them down to 30 amps. So that's a lot of juice going to two things. I never pull that much energy. I use 4,500 watt hot water heater elements. I have one in my hot liquor tank, which is an aluminum pot. It's a 25 gallon aluminum pot with a hot water heater element actually bolted into the side of it down near the bottom. And it has a temperature probe in it. And those all run back to the central control unit that I use to control everything. For my brew pot, though, I use just a heat stick. I have two different style heat sticks. They're both 450 watts, 220. But one is shaped kind of like an L, and one is kind of straight. So depending on the style of pot I'm using that day, I can switch out. And technically, I could put them both in at the same time and plug them both in to get 9,000 watts if I really wanted to. I've never really needed that. That's a little overkill. So
9,000 watts?
9,000 watts of electricity right into my brew pot, yeah.
Wow. Now, have you done any kind of, I mean, it sounds like a lot of juice. It sounds like it would be expensive, but have you done some cost analysis between propane and electricity?
Right. So the way electric energy is usually charged to most people, the way it's billed out, is that you are charged based on the kilowatt. That's the 1,000 watts per hour. So let's say my brew pot was on for a whole hour, on steady, full blast for an hour. I have a 4,500 watt element. So that would equal 4.5 kilowatts. So if your current billing rate is like mine, which I think is around 10 cents, it might be conservative, let's say 12 or even let's say 15 cents. It's still, you're talking a buck, $2, something like that, maybe. Whereas, you know, I probably would burn through a half a tank of propane, maybe more, especially when you're doing all grain and you're having to heat your hot liquor tank first, and then you're going to be boiling two later, so you use more energy that way. So, you know, and also, like I said before, all the heat is going into the liquid. None of it's just creating heat for the room. You know, I think it's probably a better way to go. You know, people might be able to argue that, but I like it.
And you know, when you're talking about propane, I do propane boiling and mashing and all outside. And if it's cold and if it's windy, I'm going to use a lot more propane than if you're here in the nice, comfy garage away from the wind, even when it's chilly outside, as it is today. And as you said, if all that energy is going straight into the fluid instead of going around the pot, it's going to be just by nature more efficient.
Yeah, that's the way I see it too. One of the things that I do in here, and one of the things you might want to consider, is that when I close off the garage and I get the pot boiling, there is a lot of condensation in the garage. So it's pretty tough. You know, I guess I could put in some sort of vent and vent the garage. So I can't completely shut the garage and do, you know, a full boil. But one of the things I can do is I can reduce kind of the aggressiveness of the boil. So I control my entire brewery with something called a BCS, a brewery control system, by Embedded Control Concepts. And this little device plugs into my network. And then from there, I can attach to it with my PC across the network, and I can control it. I can actually watch, you know, things about it. And what it does a few things. It gives me four temperature probes, so I can monitor four different temperatures. I can also turn on and off eight different things. So let's say I want to turn on my brew kettle. I can actually monitor the temperature and turn it on at a certain temperature or turn it off at a certain temperature. I can also do things like, say, turn the heating element on for 50% of the time. So, you know, over every 5 seconds or so, it would be on for half the time and off for half the time, which in effect reduces its power by half. So what I can do is I can keep dialing down. I can throttle down that heating element so that it's only on 40% of the time or 30% of the time. And I can set that span from, you know, 4 or 5 seconds to 10 seconds, depending on how fast I want that to pulse. And what I can do is I can bring it right down to just a simmer or bring it up to a nice little even boil. So you don't have to, run it at full throttle the entire time.
And there's a, since it's on the network, there's an added advantage in that that you can start the brew day in bed, essentially.
Yeah, that's true. It's pretty cool. Somebody came up with a little iPhone app that you can use. You can also just go to, you know, a web browser, any web browser, and control the device. What I can do is, and what I normally do for my brew days is I stage my water into my hot liquor tank and then get everything set up and ready to go. And then set my alarm, and in the morning when I wake up, I just roll over and tell it to start the hot liquor tank and go to 180 degrees and wait for me to get my cup of coffee and come out.
That's awesome. That's worth the price of admission right there, in my opinion. So you can it's literally on your phone. If you're on the network anywhere, you can take a look at what your temperature probes are doing on this BCS system.
Right. Yeah. So during the brew day, you can, and I do, I turn everything on and off with my iPhone or at the PC by clicking, you know. So I hook my pump to it and I turn the pump on and off by clicking on the button for the pump. I have a heat stick that I can use in my mash tun to kind of warm the mash tun up, and I can put that in there. And then when I'm all done, I have one of the two refrigerators also controlled by the BCS. So this two-door commercial refrigerator is being controlled by the BCS. And there's two temperature probes usually in there at all times, one inside some liquid and one inside just hanging in the air. And that way I can usually get kind of the liquid and air temperature in there. And that's nice because I can see it has a little graph, and I can see the air temperature fluctuates up and down as the unit kicks on and off, so I can watch it cycle. I can also see the liquid temperature is a very good approximation of what the beer will be once it stabilizes inside the cooler. So I use those two, and then I can, you know, set the fermenter to whatever I want it to be.
And I guess while it's actively fermenting, could you see the inside of the fermenter being warmer than the outside of the fermenter because of the active fermentation and the heat that the fermentation gives off? I mean, do you see that?
You could probably. If I want to actually put a temperature probe and actually monitor the internal temperature of the fermenting beer, I actually have some things so I can do that. I ferment in commercial Sankey kegs a lot, the 15-gallon style, and I have a special device that clamps onto the top and allows me to, it has a thermowell in it, and I can actually drop the probe for the BCS right to the core of that and actually monitor its core temperature, the internal temperature of the refrigerator, and, you know, the constant liquid temperature that's, you know, just monitoring the temperature of the thing. So, and it graphs all those things, so you can watch all those things change.
So you can have a visual record over time of how all your gear is doing. Make sure everything's on the up and up.
Right. As a matter of fact, one of the things I like to do is get the graph set up when I'm getting ready to start the mash. And that way I can actually, when I'm done with my, with the mash, and everything's converted, I actually have kind of a graph of the temperature steps and as the whole way through. So I typically just do single infusion. So I don't see a lot of stuff, but you do get to see that it rose to here, stabilized. You saw it. You can see that it, does it dip? How many times did it dip? It's pretty interesting.
And for the back to the fermenters, you've got a separate system set up so you can actually watch your beer ferment from wherever you are too, which I've seen other people do as well. Putting their you don't have it publicly available, but you're able to see actually watch your beer ferment. And I imagine it with my luck, I would set this up and I'd be 1,000 miles away and watching an explosive blow off or something going on, and there would be nothing I could do about it.
Well, the blow off would be trapped inside the refrigerator. It'd probably be okay. It is pretty nice. I have a security camera system that I have set up. Mainly, it's not really so much for security, so much as that I can watch my dogs and watch my beer ferment. I do. I have at least one camera in the fermentation locker usually, and sometimes two, and then one in the garage kind of monitoring the brewery, and then some around the house so that I can see the dogs playing on the back deck and stuff like that. But it is pretty nice. Whenever I do get a beer started, and Sunday is almost always when I brew, Monday morning I go to work, and that's about when the beer starts to get really fun and start to take off, and it's nice. I can actually put it, pull the laptop up at my desk, and put on the fermenter cam, and actually my friends come by and watch the beer ferment at my desk.
Now, is there anything else we need to cover on the brains of the operation? There are a couple of different controllers that they sell, and you've
right. I got the original one. It's the smaller of the two. They now make one with additional temperature probes. The new one has 8 temperature probes, where mine only has 4. I certainly would love to have some more temperature probes. That's, since it's the thing they include the fewest of, it's always the thing you wish you had more of. I'm seriously tempted to get the new BCS, which is, 8 temperature probes and, like, I think 18 new outputs, so that's a bunch, and you can get additional controller cards and control dozens more outputs. So I could, and it does allow you to do some programming, so I could, in essence, really write some sophisticated programs to, monitor temperatures, turn things on and off. I don't do that so much. I just really just turn it on and off as I go, but like I was saying, I am tempted to get the newer unit, use that for the brewery side, and then use my smaller unit for the fermentation side. That way I could have a dedicated 4 temperature probes in the fermentation locker, maybe monitoring 2 beers and then the temperatures. I don't know. I'd like to get the new one, but
there's always more toys.
That's for sure. I do. Yeah, we haven't covered a lot of the stainless gadgets and stuff. And there's a lot of stuff that I'd like to get down the road. I don't know whether I will or not. It's one of those things. You every time you brew, it seems like I think of something else that would make my life a little easier or make the process go a little smoother. We'll see.
Now, you also use the BCS for cooking as well.
That's right. Since after I kind of got the brewery hooked up and I'd been using it for a while, I realized that, I had a smoker that was a gas-powered smoker, but it had kind of stopped working. The gas part had kind of, gotten messed up. And so I was either going to have to replace the gas components in it and repair it. And then I got to thinking, I can turn on and off, 220 volts. I can monitor temperatures. Smoker, about the same as my brewery. You shouldn't get up above about 210, 212. So I took my smoker and, kind of cannibalized it and ran electric power to it. I got a stovetop burner and wired that up to the 220. And now when I want to smoke, I just roll that out to the driveway. And it has a little smoke generator. It's called a Bradley smoke generator that uses these pucks that kind of just continuously feeds these pucks in to generate the smoke. And then the heating element just keeps the box warm so that I can keep the smoker at, you know, 180, 190 degrees for 12 hours, whatever. Or I can turn the heating element on, and when it gets cold out like it is today, I could run the smoker and put cheese in it and do kind of cold smoking and do, smoked cheese or maybe some smoked salmon or something like that that you want to do, more like a curing or drying.
Or smoked barley, if you wanted to.
Ooh, you could certainly do that.
Now, back to brewing. Take us through, because I want to talk about your brew stand as well.
Okay.
So, to kind of take us through, you know, linearly a brew day and kind of describe your equipment as we go along.
Okay. So, when I get started for a brew day, the first thing I'll do is I'll bring all the ingredients home from the shop.
Which is handy.
Yeah. I have a stainless steel stand that was originally made for a different purpose. I was going to use it to package malt and other things with at my store. And it consists of a giant stainless steel funnel on a stainless steel stand. And I decided later that it would make a better brewery. So what I do is the funnel is way up at the very top of the stand. And it's a big funnel. It's probably 2 feet across at the top at least. And it's probably 2 feet deep, almost maybe 3 feet deep. And it'll hold quite a bit. And what I do is I dump all my grain into that funnel, and that allows me to meter the grain slowly into the mash tun that rests below it. At the very bottom of the stand is the hot liquor tank. So it's kind of a vertical stand with the grain silo at the top, mash tun in the middle, and the hot liquor tank underneath it. I heat the water. As I said before, I can just turn that on from inside and wait for it to get to 180, and it'll hold it at a constant 180 until I'm ready for it. And then what I do is I pump that up into the mash tun, filling it to the level that I want for the beer I'm making, and you know the amount of strike water that I'm going to need. And I let it rest for a little while, and kind of that helps stabilize the temperature of the mash tun. It's a stainless steel keg. And if the mash tun stabilizes too low, I can always drain the water back into the vessel below it, warm it some more, and bring it back up. So it's pretty easy to get the mash tun, you know, dialed in to the perfect temperature. And then once I get the right amount of strike water in there, I have a cordless drill with a kind of a paint stirrer thing at the bottom of it. And what I do is I stand up there and I meter the grain in with one hand, with, you know, just kind of letting it flow through out of the bottom of this big stainless funnel. And then I stir it with the cordless drill and get a nice consistent mix of my mash, get rid of any dough balls. Then once it's, you know, completely, all the grain is dumped out of the silo, or the funnel above, I give it a good stir, get it all stabilized, put the lid on, and then I start monitoring the temperature on the BCS. You wait, your hour and a half, depends on what your recipe calls for. If it seems to drop and I can watch the temperature on the BCS, and the temperature probe I have is on a long long wand. It's a kind of a single thermal well that I've got. It's about 2 feet long, and so I can probe all down inside the mash tun and just double check all the temperatures, make sure there's not any cold spots or hot spots. If it does drop, I can always I have a heat stick, and it's just a 110 heat stick.
Now, for those who are uninitiated who haven't heard our episodes on the heat sticks, describe what a heat stick is.
Okay, so a heat stick is something that you make. Now, I think they do make a couple of these out there now, but most homebrewers make them. And you make it with a hot water heater element, a couple different pieces of plumbing hardware, and some epoxy. And you hook all this stuff up, you do what's called potting, which is you mix this epoxy and you pour it down inside the the plumbing parts where you've got your the wires connected to the heating element, and that completely encases the parts that could short out or get in contact with water, and it completely encases them in epoxy. You hook all this together, and what you end up with is basically a hot water heater element on a stick. And they work really, really well. The one thing about, you know, is that most of the time they are simply a heating element with a plug at the other end. So they need to be submerged before you plug them in, and so the heating element will burn up. Most of them will if they're out of water. They're not meant to be dry fired, is what it's called. Now there are some heating elements. The ones I use for my 220. Those are called ultra-low watt density heating elements, and those actually can be dry-fired. I don't recommend it. I don't do it on purpose, but it can withstand dry-firing. Anyway, you have these heat sticks. They have they get really hot. What I do is if the mash tun starts to cool off, I take the 110 heat stick, submerge it in the mash tun, go plug it in, and then I get up there and stir it and watch the graph. And as the temperature climbs back to where I want it, I get down, unplug it, and pull it out. But you could actually hook it to the BCS so that I could watch it and have it shut off when it gets warm enough, you know. So, but I don't bother with that. I just do it the simple way.
And I have a heat stick, and I love it. And I have to credit Jeff Karpinski who sent me the heat stick. I didn't have to go through the. Luckily for me, because I would probably electrocute myself if I were to build one myself. I'm not handy that way, but anyway, mine is great for bringing helping the propane or the stovetop, whichever I'm using, come up to temperature faster. And look in the archives, search for heat stick or electric brewing in the archives, and you can get a better idea of how to build one of those things. So you've got your mashes done, and now what happens?
Well, then I run that off into the brew pot. I have a one of the nice Bleckman boiler makers, and it's a 20 gallon. It's a beaut. Got it last year for Christmas, and so that's what I boil in. Boil for whatever it calls for. Sometimes they call for a little longer. So I boil, and when I'm done with that, I pump it over into the conical fermenter, which is located inside the refrigerator.
And again, the boil is done with the heat sticks, right? There's
That's
no
right.
element built into the kettle.
That's right. I could do that. I could punch a hole in the bottom of the brew pot and permanently install the heating element right in there. But I kind of like the way this works because I have the option of switching between the style of heat stick I want to use. And the heat stick just hangs nicely in there, and the heating element basically rests just off the bottom of the pot, which really makes for a good it's way down in the fluid, so it's generating all its heat way down in there. I really like the way it works with the heat sticks, and my pot doesn't have a big hole in it, so if I did put the heat stick in and permanently install it, if you took it out, you'd have to have some plug to hold, plug that hole back up, and it'd be a pretty big hole. So,
plus, when you upgrade to the 40-gallon pot,
there you go. Yeah, that's the other thing is that sometimes I'm only going to do, let's say, a 5-gallon batch, and that's a big pot to do 5 gallons in. So what I will do is sometimes I'll pull down what I'm now using is my mash tun, which is a kegel. And I'll pull that down and I'll use the heat stick in there, so I can switch back and forth. It's kind of nice.
So after you've got it to, after the boil is over, time to chill?
Yeah, I currently still use an immersion chiller. I just put that in the brew pot there. Chill, and then I usually do a chill, and then I do the ice chill, depending on, around here in the summer especially, you can't hardly get it cold enough. So I have a little pond pump that I put in a cooler, and I'll do the ice circulation at the very end to drive the temperature really, down to fermentation temperature before I pump it over into the fermenter.
As many hops as you put in a beer, an immersion chiller may be the easiest thing not to get all clogged up.
Yeah, that's true. I certainly could get the one of those plate chillers, and I've thought about it. But I, you know, I do put an awful lot of hops in some of my beers, and that, you know, they would just clog one of those up. And although there are some, there's some new gadgets out there from some of my favorite vendors of brewing hardware that that I might be looking to acquire soon that might help me with that.
And so the, so it's all chilled, and then you pump it into the fermenters and put it in the fermentation fridge. And do you set, do you control the temperature of the fridge with the BCS as well?
Yeah, that's right. So what I'll do is when I pump it over there, I'll actually try to get the refrigerator and the fermenters to the temperature that they're going to be in. And if I've made a starter, I usually have the starter sitting in there too. So it's basically sitting at the temperature the beer will end up at. And from time to time, you know, I'll pump it over and then I'll check the temperature on the fermenter and it'll be maybe still a couple degrees higher than I want it to be. So I just let it sit in there for another couple hours with a refrigerator running and it'll get it to where it needs to be. So, like I said, usually I just set it to, you know, whatever, like 68 degrees, 64 degrees, whatever I'm trying to hit. Depending on what kind of fermenter it is, like I said, when I'm using, a keg, a converted keg or a keg to do it, I'll use one with an actual thermal well in it. I also have a Bleckman conical, and I just tape the temperature probe to the side of it when I use it because it doesn't have a thermal well. And then the same thing with glass carboys. I'll just tape the temperature probe to the side of it to try and monitor the temperature of the fermenter. But for the most part, you can just, what you do is you just set the fermenter, the cabinet, to be the temperature you want the beer to be at, right? And it'll just keep trying to push it to that point. Now the beer is going to try and push you past that point because the beer is going to try to warm up a little bit as it's releasing that energy as it ferments. But the refrigerator will keep driving it back, holding it at that temperature. And then, you know, if I want to, you could actually program into the BCS ramping. So you can actually go in there and say, from this temperature to this temperature over this amount of time, ramp it. And it will basically, so like let's say and you're doing a Saison or something and you're wanting to start it at, you know, a moderate temperature, 68 degrees. And then by the end of the, you know, week and a half, you want it up 80, 85 degrees or something. You could actually have it do that where it's actually going and, oh, you know, 4 hours from now it'll be a little warmer. Four more hours it'll be a little warmer, you know. So I usually don't do that. I usually just come out here in the morning and change it, bump it up by another degree or two, and then do that again the next day and do that again the next day. I'm always wanting to be out here fidgeting with it anyway and watching the beer and playing with it. So it's easy for me just to come and monkey with it. And also, if I get to work and I decide, oh, I'd forgotten to change the temperature, the set point, I just log in and change it.
And that'd be handy if you were doing a lager, if you wanted to do your primary fermentation at a certain temperature and then wrap up to a diacetyl rest and then ramp down to long-term, you know, lagering temperatures. That'd be a really easy way to do it as well.
Yep, and I've done that in, I've only done a couple lagers. I did one recently, and it's what I did in here. I ran it up, diacetyl rest, and then I ran it down until it got cold, and then pretty much as soon as I got it cold, then I moved it into a cooler that's already cold. So then I could start to use the fermentation cabinet for back up to, you know, normal temperatures for fermentation in the 60s for ales and stuff.
Yeah, for your favorite hoppy ales.
Yes.
Well, then you've got... you want to talk about the guts of the magic beer fridge? I mean, you've got quite a lot of beer on tap. How do you manage all that CO2?
I do. I have this three-door refrigerator here, and inside I actually have a CO2 tank in there, and then I have a gas manifold. So there's like a six-way manifold inside here. So if you look down inside here, which when we do the video, we'll be able to show this, but... So there's a manifold with six drops on it, so I can actually run CO2 to six different kegs, and then I run up to another manifold, or up to another controller where I actually control the pressure for the whole refrigerator. So the The tank has a pressure gauge on it that monitors it, and whatever, if I split off and I want to carbonate, I can use it, high pressure. And then I have like a standing pressure that's just serving pressure for the whole refrigerator, and that's got a separate manifold for that. Mm. And I also have a CO2 filter which runs across the back. I don't know how necessary that is, but it just seems like a nice thing to have. So the CO2 comes out of the tank through its normal regulator, runs up to a quick disconnect that hooks into the filter, runs through the filter to a pressure regulator that controls all the pressure for the fridge, down to the 6 outlets, and then from there out to the 6 different kegs, although there's more than 6 kegs in here right now.
And you can kind of switch back and forth, you know, as serving demands necessitate.
Right. I have a couple drops for commercial kegs, for like Sankey D taps and Sankey S taps. And then I also have some of the drops for homebrew kegs, the old soda pop kegs. So it doesn't matter. I can hook either one up pretty much at any time.
Well, this is it's interesting. You know, I've learned a couple of things, a couple of details that I didn't know before. So this has been very useful. Is there anything else that we should be talking about that we haven't yet? Hmm.
Well, the only thing else is probably I do have some toolboxes that I have that where my brewery is, and I really think they make a big difference in my organization. And that is that there's the trays, and I can lay out all my brewing gear in them horizontally and flat. And also at the top is where I set up all the equipment to monitor the laptop and all that stuff. So it allows me to not just have all my brewing gadgets and stuff in a box or piled in a bag somewhere. And they're all laid out flat, and I can, when I pull the drawer open, I can see them. So I have a drawer that has like ball valves in it. I have a drawer that has racking canes and auto siphons and thieves all along. They need a place to lay down and dry out. So that's the other thing I really like, is that, you know, adds that level of organization to the brewery.
That's very nice. My stuff's all stored in the basement, and, you know, running up and down the stairs gets a little old, so this is very nice to have it, and it looks a lot better. It looks a lot more organized than my stuff, which is on just shelves downstairs, but very cool. And what's on your dream list? I mean, what's next on your list to improve the system? What are you missing?
Well, I really would like to get a better way to manage the super hoppy beers. They, you know, when you put a lot of hops in a beer, you end up with a lot of waste. It's very difficult to separate them, especially at a homebrew level. I have a pump. I do the Whirlpool thing. It's just not the same as a professional Whirlpool. But I'd like to find a way that does it really well. So there's some gadgets I'm looking at for that. I also would like to do the recirculation infusion mash, so that I might be able to set it up where I could do temperature steps on my mash tun without just stirring with a heat stick, where I could do a pump and recirculation past a heating element controlled by the BCS, and be able to do that. So I'm kind of looking at some gadgets to do that. Mainly right now, though, what I'd like to do is get the rest of the garage kind of cleared up and then put in a sink. That's really the big thing I want to do, is, and that's really, to me, that's going to be one of the big things that brings me close to being done with what I want, is to have a stainless deep sink here in the garage with hot and cold running water, so that in the middle of winter, I can do everything in here, from washing, cleaning up, and also have a filtered water standing by in the garage. So when I want to brew, I just get the filter, take it over, hang it in the, you know, in the brew pot, and turn on the water, or in the hot liquor tank, and fill it up, and be ready to go. So.
And then the floor drain, And then the waterproof walls that you can clean with just spraying, and then the
yeah. I don't know about the floor drain. We'll see. Probably just a squeegee. Just push it out the door.
Yeah, that's right. You could just push it out on the driveway and let the rain take care of it. Well, this has been fun, Andy. I appreciate the time.
No problem. Welcome anytime, James.
Well, thanks again, as always, to Andy Sparks. You can find Andy's shop at thehomebrewery.com. And in person, if you're ever in Northwest Arkansas, you can drop by. Is a shop in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and it's right behind the new Come and Go, which is a convenience store. And I look forward to exploring the magic beer fridge at Andy's annual Christmas party. Always fun. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site along with our Brewer's Logbook. Get yours before the beginning of the year. They're going out the door right now. We got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time, and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com, and if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com links. We appreciate the support there greatly. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Doo-Wops and Hooligans, that came from the UK link, and easy-to-do card tricks for children. Very cool. I was way into magic as a kid. Big surprise. You guys are really, I said it last week that you guys are wearing out that link, and you are. It's impressive to see all the stuff that's going through there. Computers and expensive shoes and books and music, and holy smokes, it's just amazing. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logos on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we definitely appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine, otherwise known as Brew Your Own Magazine, through our associate links on basicbrewing.com as well. Well, that's it. Thank goodness. Thanks. For listening. Until next week, I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by our buddy Kelly Dodson down in Austin, Texas. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.